Let us read responsively selection number 47. I regret very much that Dr. Walter Gordy, James B. Duke Professor of Physics at Duke University, has not arrived. He was to speak to us in chapel today. He is a man of international eminence in his field, a very dear friend. I talked with his secretary yesterday, and she said that he would be here at 10 o'clock this morning. And I gave directions as to how to find the chapel. But the road from Wake Forest to Durham has been described recently by one of our highway commissioners as a dangerous, sorry highway. I think I see an intimation that Dr. Gordy may be arriving. A highway that is described by a highway commissioner as a dangerous and sorry highway in anything like normal weather may be especially hazardous today. It's valuable to have at least one place in the world where we can be still for a few minutes. I doubt that you can understand how happy I am to present our speaker. Our speaker today is Dr. Walter Gordy of Duke University. He earned the BA degree at Mississippi College with special distinction, and the MA degree and the PhD degree at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Subsequently, he was awarded honorary degrees both in Europe and in the United States. He is James B. Duke Professor of Physics at Duke University. In 1933, I met him at Chapel Hill. At that time, he had the aspirations and potentialities of a scholar. Today, he is a first-rate scholar and teacher whose attainments are recognized in his field in many lands. He has retained a dynamic interrelation of critical intelligence and religious faith. This appears to be an exceptionally difficult and rare achievement. I'm tempted to repeat what he said to me in January 1945. I had gone to Andover Newton Theological School for an address and was a guest in his home at Cambridge. At that time, he was engaged in special research at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. But I shall refrain. He is a man of great learning and of deep faith. It is my pleasure to welcome him and to present to you Dr. Walter Gordy. I might add, just before he speaks, that he is a brave man to drive highway number 98 today to be with us. Dr. Gordy.
I wish I had time to introduce Dr. Binkley to you. I could do a good job. I decided one time this morning that the Lord didn't want a scientist to speak to a theological seminary, and he was constrained to prevent it. But after stopping to get changed, I did better. With the Lord's help, at least I came upon worse sinners who were in the ditch. It's a very slick road, and I'm very sorry that I'm so late. I would also say that I have a very great affection for Dr. Binkley and Dr. Leo Green, who was my class laboratory mate in physics. I don't know whether you know that Dr. Green also had a major in physics at Mississippi College. The subject of this brief speech will be the separation of church and science. I have heard many attempts to explain the cause of the Renaissance, this great awakening, which seemed to affect all areas of learning and progress. It seemed rather strange that suddenly men would become so brilliant that Shakespeare and Galileo were born in the same year. Copernicus and Martin Luther were born within 10 years of each other. Oh, there were many others about this time. I think that probably it would be easier and make more sense to explain rather the absence of progress over 1,000 or so years. It may be best to say that mankind is actually a very progressive animal or being, that he only fails to make progress when held down. Then we don't have to explain such men as Martin Luther, Copernicus, Galileo, Shakespeare, and others. They would be here in every century if conditions would allow them to proceed with progress. Maybe this is the answer. But if you try to explain the collapse of civilization after the Roman Empire and then this dark period of about 1,200 years from 300 AD till about the 15th century or 14th century. I think that you could find it, define it as an area appeared of integration of church and state and the integration of science and state. This was a very unfortunate combination. Of course, the hordes of barbarians came in and destroyed the Roman Empire, we are told, but it wouldn't have stayed destroyed for 1,000 years if some force had not been there to restrain men like Copernicus. Indeed, Roger Bacon, about the 12th century, attempted some progress, but this was about the only light in science in the whole period. And I think that, well, I don't know what you think about the religion, but the science during that period was essentially nil. Certainly the economic progress was nil. People starved and they were in bad condition. I'm inclined to think the religion was also very poor quality. Now, the Inquisition generally is thought of as occurring about the 14th or 15th century, when the church, or the church and state together, which was essentially one, tried to crush the new Enlightenment. You probably think of it in terms of the Protestant Revolution and the attempts of the authorities to crush the new Protestant religion. As a scientist, I would think of it in terms of the attempts of the church to crush science. The attempts to prevent the people from learning about, say, the universe around them, the Copernican theory, which is the first sensible theory of our solar system, the only one that had made sense. And actually the burning of people like Bruno, who tried to teach it, or the, I suppose they would have burned, of course, Galileo had he not denied it. Many of you probably don't realize that Priestley, who first discovered oxygen, would have been killed if he hadn't come to this new country. He was also a liberal preacher, a very religious man. Actually, Galileo was a religious man. So were most of the early scientists. But there was an attempt to keep the status quo, which was a very low status quo. And this was characteristic of the period. But many people do not realize that the Inquisition actually started about 300 to 400 AD. It continued all through the Dark Ages. You could read in the period of history the people who were periodically burned for witchery and this and that. But it was a period in which learning was kept down, largely for religious reasons, by a combination of religion and state. No progress could have been made. After Galileo, about the time of Galileo and his unfortunate experience and others at this time, the scientists learned, I think, that they had to be rather restricted and rather quiet. And so the Royal Society, which was supposedly a society to gain knowledge of nature by experimental method, met secretly for the first 15 or so years, and they stuck strictly to their subject, that is, the knowledge gained by the new science, which was actually based on Galileo's method of learning by measurement. And so Galileo deliberately restricted himself to the phenomena, or to the quantities, which could be deliberately and carefully measured. Now, I think that this is generally called the scientific method, That's a simple exposition of it, but it was used by some Greeks earlier, but had been, of course, forgotten all during this age, in which the science of the Dark Ages was largely that which Aristotle had gathered. It was not really the best of the Greek science. But nevertheless, Galileo started using again a method which had been briefly used by the Greek Pythagoras and others, and that was to learn by measurement. Now, this was a very great restriction upon science, to limit it to the things that could be measured carefully to that phenomena and essentially isolated from other influences while being measured, was to restrict it greatly. It turned out, well, Galileo deliberately limited himself to this to try to free science from error, not to free science from oppression. But fortunately, it achieved a great measure of both. The organized church, which we like to call the Roman Church, but it was all Christian religion up until the time of the Protestant revolt, lost a great deal of faith, and indeed they knew they would lose a great deal of faith by admitting an error in their attempts to persecute Galileo and others for Copernicus' theory. It became so obvious to all intelligent people that this was actually a true state of affairs of the universe, until the church certainly was losing faith fast. And so the church took advantage of this new method being practiced by the scientists and essentially defined that which could be learned by the experimental method as out of bounds to religion. This was a beginning of a wedge or a separation of church and science, which has essentially lasted to this day. The scientists welcomed this very much indeed, because they were glad for the opportunity to have some intellectual freedom, even though in a very limited sphere. And so these scientists, who first met about the 1600 and 1650 to form the Royal Society, stuck to their subject strictly. And as it evolved, religion let them alone. The things that could be learned by science were either unimportant or materialistic or evil or to be excluded from religion. However, the scientist increased the reach of his instruments, his measuring instruments, and increased the precision of them, and began to probe the far reaches of the universe and the innermost parts of the atom. And this method succeeded beyond anybody's wildest imagination, I suppose. And so as science began to increase the reach of its instruments, religion, to keep this separation up, had to withdraw further and further as science advanced. However, this seemed to have happened. And so the scientists, the physical scientists at least, I say physical scientists because there was a Scopes trial, which probably actually equaled, although I'm sure some of you probably wouldn't admit this, but you will eventually have to admit it, it probably equaled the Copernicus affair of earlier Christianity, in being a colossal attempt to hold back the advance of scientific knowledge. But truth will inevitably out. And it is not good religion or good sense either to oppose it. Well, anyway, except for this affair which happened in this country, I think that probably no group of people have ever enjoyed the intellectual freedom that the physical scientists have in the past 300 years. I was interested to see that even the Chinese Maoists now, who are like Stalin was a few decades back, trying to suppress all opposition and are actually trying to sic the ignorant people on those of learning and the children upon the elders and so forth. This very great thing, which is reminiscent of the Dark Ages. Anyway, I noticed that there was one people in China that were free to go about their business. That was the physical scientists. They were working in their laboratories, they are now, under great freedom to pursue their knowledge. So that even the states without religion seem to let the physical scientists alone. As a result of this freedom, intellectual freedoms, physical science has attracted some of the most brilliant brains of this area. Actually, probably religion has suffered more from inquisitions and attempts to suppress learning and knowledge and advancement by far than science. Religion's brightest men have been squelched and crushed and prevented from proceeding, not so much perhaps by persecution, outright persecution, as Galileo suffered and Bruno and others, but perhaps by the very teachings of many that the subject of a religion is just too sacred to think in an objective way about. It's just so sacred. And so that one builds walls about his own brain, which tends to suppress the advance. And so we are faced with a situation in which science has veritably run away with progress and moral phenomena. And it might be characterized not so much as the rapid progress of science, but the very slow progress of religion. And one needs to think about why this is true, and whether or not the better brains, or even the better spirits, are going into religion. And if not, why not? Well, I would like to say, though, that now we are faced with a time when perhaps this coexistence of science and religion is threatened. It's threatened partly because of the wide gap between the two, which has come upon us. Partly by, I would say, the drag of religion, which has created the gap, or the rapid pace of science. I don't know. But it is true that religion is faced with a serious decision. Whether to continue to withdraw as science advances. Already, religion has withdrawn until it's concerned primarily with disembodied spirits. The heavens no longer declare the glory of God unless it's to a scientist. The firmament doesn't show its handiwork except to a scientist. In fact, many religionists regard the firmament as a materialistic type of thing, which is just without significance. But this may be possible. You would ask, where does the Spirit of God reveal itself? Where does God reveal itself? Only in the spirit of only in personality, perhaps, or the emotional characteristics of mankind. This has been the last stronghold of the manifestation now of God. But today, and I mentioned this biological, this more recent biological affair, but that skirmish has simply boiled us, blown away with the real one to be faced, somewhat like the Copernican Revolution, is ahead of us. Molecular biology is making great progress, very rapid progress. More progress than the general public realizes, far more probably progress than the religious community realizes. There must be a great revolution ahead. There will be truths that will seem to contradict religion, and religion might, some religionists will tend to try to suppress it. Now, I would like to remind you that it was not a trivial matter to the church at the 15th century, this new Copernican system. It threatened the very foundations of the religion because so much had been based upon it. It did seem to be a great threat. I think it was, and I think it was probably realistic in the people to oppose it, although it was not wise. One could see their justified reasons why they would think that they were justified, at least. And in this, it will be true. I think that there will be a very clear reason to religionists to oppose molecular biology, because it will give a mechanistic explanation of emotions and behavior, and human behavior to a great extent. Already, scientists are taking parts of the brain of one animal and putting it in the brains of another and transferring characteristics. Already they are putting electrical pulses through a little nerve on one side of a monkey's head and making him very evil and mad. Putting electrical pulses on the other side, making him very happy and friendly and warm-hearted. Drugs, even many people are taking LSD and that sort of thing to get religious experience. To me, it is a grotesque thing, dangerous, but it will tell some religious people, however, that it is possible to go into a religious swoon in ways other than reading poetry or music or listening to sermons. It will perhaps give them some more caution against giving away to their own emotions and letting their senses go astray. It will give some caution, I hope, but it will be dangerous unless we are prepared to think and see how we can reconcile, how we can work together, how we can work this thing out. It would be impossible. Well, I don't know whether it would be impossible or not. I think that to try to suppress this kind of knowledge, if it's true, and it's the way people are, and it's the way the universe is created, it would be unthinkable. The Inquisition would look like a sideshow. To suppress the advance of science at this stage would require a far greater force, war, than anyone has seen during any inquisitions. But what's more, it would reduce religion to an inconceivably cruel force. This is the thing which one would have to think about, its impact on religion. Well, I just wanted to leave that thought with you. I don't have any solution. I just say, though, that one has to think about this as a problem. I am myself essentially a religious person. While being a scientist, I, however, am not inclined to join any religious inquisitions of any kind.
I'm sure you want me to express on your behalf, as well as on my behalf, our gratitude to Dr. Gordy. Let us pray. Help us, our Father, to lay to heart the words we have heard in thy presence today. Give us wisdom and courage to use the wisdom and the energy which we receive from thee in tasks that are in harmony with the structure of this universe and of thy redemptive purpose in the world, through Jesus Christ, our Lord.